Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
A tablespoon of cod liver oil every morning, plenty of exercise, drinking less, sleeping more. We've heard all the advice, but when it comes to our health, many of us tend to be a little more reactive rather than proactive. Well, my next guest believes that we should place greater emphasis on our health rather than healthcare in order to delay the onset of major chronic diseases. But is it as easy as it sounds? Dr. Paddy Barrett is preventative cardiologist at the Black Rock Clinic, and he's here. Paddy, you're very welcome. I should say to our listeners, if they have any questions, they can get in touch. The WhatsApp number is 0870 32 32 32. I said there that people tend to know the basics. Do you agree, though, that most of us are reactive rather than proactive when it comes to our health?
I think that largely applies to a lot of things in life. We're incentive-based creatures. We respond to our short-term incentives. But I think in order to hit larger goals, particularly around health, we have to look at much more long-term strategic targets. And the line that you said at the start really is that there's a constant emphasis on the need to support healthcare. And that is definitely true. But in order to fix healthcare, we need to fix health. The reason that is the case is that putting more and more money into fixing healthcare is one thing, but if you can put that money towards efforts that actually promote health, so therefore decrease the utilization of healthcare, it is a much more kind of long-term strategic goal that we could hopefully hit, but that's a long-term goal.
In general terms, in Ireland, are we better at our lifestyles and managing our lifestyles and our health than we were, say, 30, 40 years ago?
100%. And I think this is something that we always need to remind ourselves. If you look at, say, cardiovascular disease, it is the leading cause of death in developed and developing nations. But if you look at the death rates at younger age groups compared to, say, the 1950s, we are leap years ahead. We are so far ahead in terms of where we were before. Mm-hmm. So we've made spectacular progress. If you look on a regular daily basis in terms of the people who are engaging in physical activity, yes, it's not as much as we would like to do, but it's so much more common now that you'll see people engaging in much more health conscious activities compared to historically, say, 50 years ago, going for a run would be seen as an unusual, strange activity.
And drinking rates are down, smoking rates are down. I mean, not where I'm sure you would want them to be, but we have improved overall.
100%. I mean, if you even look at, say, smoking rates over the last 50 years, their reduction very closely tracks with significant reductions in, say, cardiovascular disease. So as a major change that we can make to our health environment that drives a lot of the behavior of individuals, we know that it's possible to do. We know that also over that 50 years, there has been a spectacular increase in rates of obesity and also the major chronic diseases that come with that. But encouragingly, we have seen really in the last year or two, an actual downtick in rates of obesity and excess weight. Mm-hmm. The reasons for that are not fully understood. There's many different theories, but it just shows that despite it being difficult to make these changes at a national level, it is possible to do, and there's historical precedent for it. And the key thing for that is that when we look at lifespans over the last 100 years, average lifespan in the 1900s was about 32. In the 2021 figures, it's about 70 years of age, much higher in developed nations. And so as a country, as an entire world, we are aging rapidly and we are living much more frequently into our 70s, 80s and 90s. The problem is that we are living into those decades with major chronic diseases that are causing huge burdens on the healthcare system. And there is a way to delay or prevent that.
So we need to get that stuff right in our 30s and 40s.
Exactly.
And so we haven't done it in our 20s.
Well so the line that I use is the things that you do in your 30s, 40s and 50s will dictate your health in your 60s, 70s and 80s. And we have very clear evidence on this, is that if you are crossing the threshold of 50 years of age and you get the core metrics of health right in terms of exercise, nutrition, weight, blood pressure, etc., you can add on average 10 to 14 years of additional health span years. And health span years are years that you have in life without a major chronic disease. That is not lifespan in terms of how long you live. They are additional years without a major chronic disease.
That is huge.
So
10 to 14 years of healthy living.
Of health span. So lifespan is how long you live. That is a binary component. You're dead or alive. Health span are the number of years that you will live of that lifespan without a major chronic disease. And we know that it is the burden of major chronic diseases that is driving most of the healthcare expenditure in most nations worldwide. So if you can set up an incentive-based structure for individuals on a larger basis to hit those metrics, if you actually look at the reduction in major chronic diseases, it will drive a significant reduction in healthcare expenditure.
So when we see the person celebrating their 100th birthday in the media, and that happens often, and the reporter will say, "And what are your secrets to a healthy and long life?" Should we pay attention to the answer?
No.
Why?
No, so this is, I think we should always be polite. If you look at the healthy centenarian population, which is our aspirational goal for those who are interested in living longer, healthier lives, the key thing to recognize is that those individuals will die from one of three things. And those three things are the same as everybody else. They will die from cardiovascular disease, cancer, or dementia. They do not die from skydiving accidents, their last ascent of K2, or, you know, some other crazy activity. They die from the same thing as everybody else. The key thing is that they get those major chronic conditions 20 to 25 years later than everybody else. Mm-hmm. So the key is that if you focus on the parameters that reduce the likelihood of that happening, so the risk factors, you can push out the timing of the onset of disease. And this is what happens when you are actually doing that at age 50 years of age. If you've hit those healthy metrics, you're delaying the onset of the major chronic disease. And what this is called is morbidity compression. So you compress the amount of time in your life that you have a major chronic disease that is impacting your quality of life, and by consequence, the actual healthcare expenditure that goes with it. And the aspirational goal for all of us and all these individuals is to, you know, die by, you know, at age 95 being shot in the back by a jealous lover. And so this is how we compress that.
But if the 95 or the 100 year old is saying, "Well, I went for a walk every day and I ate fibre and didn't drink too much."
But that's rarely what they say. If you look at the literature on these individuals, the healthy centenarian population, and you look at their lifestyle patterns are as bad, if not worse, than everybody else. So the key reason that they live to really these extreme ages beyond 100 years of age is in large part connected to their genetics. So they have a genetic body armour that causes this phase shift in the timing of onset of a major chronic disease. Most of us do not have that genetic body armor. So therefore, we have to use a different approach, but we can use the same model. So if we can say, listen, by changing our behaviors to delay the onset of a major chronic disease, we can at least emulate in a directional sense what the healthy centenarians do. But if you look at the activities that they often propose in terms of the cod liver oil, the apple cider vinegar, the glass of Guinness, the two cigarettes, that relationship is not going to be the case. If you look at Jean Calment, who was the oldest living person ever, who died at 122 years of age, she smoked her entire life.
So it was genetics.
So to a large extent.
So somebody who is being very healthy and abstemious might be just facing an uphill battle in this search for healthy old age because their genetics are off.
Correct. But the thing is that we always have to look at genetics being probabilistic rather than deterministic. So it may tilt the odds against you and you actually are fighting an uphill battle. But that does not mean that you can pull the levers across other domains to de-risk yourself. If you look at people who have a high risk for cardiovascular disease and they do all the things right from a lifestyle perspective, they decrease their risk by 50%. Mm-hmm. So it is probabilistic, not deterministic.
I mentioned cod liver oil at the beginning. Are you in favour of a spoon of full of cod liver oil every day?
I think it's pretty gross.
Right, it is pretty gross, but is it beneficial?
I have limited reason to suspect that it is beneficial. My general take on supplements and things like that is that there are far better money is far better spent on things like spending your time outside and getting exercise and activity. Mm-hmm. I think there's not a huge amount of evidence in terms of the supplements and things that you take will add significantly to your health.
So it's very much the basics. It's eating healthily and getting exercise, being outside, having friends.
Correct.
All of those things. Now, a couple of messages coming in. Monica says that this is a vital topic. Thank you, Monica. But what does the individual do to lower cholesterol if they're 72, they've never smoked, have the ideal weight, exercise every day, no alcohol, no red meat, plenty of heart health diet, but still have very high cholesterol and I'm taking statins? What can be done?
So what I would say is this is a very common scenario that we face, and people put in lots of effort. They're told by their doctor that they need to watch their diet, etc. And they come come back, they have high cholesterol, they come back, recheck it, and it's still high. And this is to do with the fact that the majority of your cholesterol levels over age, say, 50 years of age are genetically determined, about 60 to 70%. So they set a genetic floor. So when you look at the dietary changes that you make to push around your cholesterol, they will only change them by 10 to 15%. And while that is very, very important at a population level, it's not that impactful at an individual level. So the changes that you make may be directionally helpful, but are rarely sufficient in isolation to get you to the target that we need. The one thing that I would say is that if your cholesterol levels are not at target on a cholesterol-lowering medication, that is a conversation with your physician about adjusting or changing or adding in additional cholesterol-lowering medications based on your risk.
Mm-hmm. So change what you're doing, perhaps, in terms of the treatment there.
It is. So I look at this as fixing cholesterol to get to very low levels is a medication problem for most people rather than a dietary problem.
Okay. This one now, Anne has given us all the numbers, but you'll understand this, Paddy. So let's go for it. Anne is 63, have consistently high cholesterol, 6.8 LDL, 4.4 HDL. And then it says 3.8 recent angiogram was clear. Does that make sense to you?
The figures are not exactly lining up there.
Okay.
I would say is the LDL figure is higher.
Is
than
high.
The, yeah. So,
okay.
But so what that means is what the person is talking about really is high cholesterol in general.
Well, she wants to know, she's reluctant to begin statins.
Okay. So this is a very important point. So statin therapy is a cholesterol-lowering medication that reduces risk. It reduces risk by about 25%. So that is a very important figure. But it's always trying to recognize if it's 25% of what in terms of your risk. So if a person has a 2% risk of a heart attack over a 10-year time frame, a 25% reduction in risk will only translate into a 0.5% absolute risk reduction over that 10-year time horizon. Now, when people look at this, say, over a 5-year time horizon, they say, well, that doesn't seem like a very good deal. So why, if I don't have any evidence of plaque in my coronary arteries, why should I go on a cholesterol-lowering medication? And my answer is number one, you do that to make sure you, on a continual basis, do not develop plaque in your coronary arteries. And the second thing is over a much longer time horizon, say over 50 years, the actual absolute risk reduction, the bang for buck that you get is far, far more.
Okay, and I hope that helps, Paddy. Thanks for coming in. It's great common sense. Paddy Barrett there, preventative cardiologist at the Black Rock Clinic.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.